We hear very little, and we understand even less.
This morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Trip. On a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Lone Hornback, Stacks, and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. We're wondering, I think we got people listening for sure today after yesterday. What do you think, Greg? I mean, yesterday was one you don't see too often.
A little bit of a whipsaw. A
little bit. So today we got S&P futures down 90, NASDAQ futures down 375 after the massive run-up yesterday, which was really something. Do we have Professor Lou?
Good morning.
How are you, buddy? Hope you were long spoo yesterday morning.
No, but... Since we're using double entendre terms, I guess we can discuss the latest scientific news that I just saw about, if we're talking about spoo, talk about Uranus and the latest scientific news out of there.
The planet?
What?
The planet Uranus?
Good. All right, we're now going to take the show back down to 7th grade humor level, or up to 7th grade humor level.
The spoos are the S&P futures.
I know. Well, that's what you say. I've often thought that about half, maybe three quarters of the terminology that you guys use are either obscene or variations of obscenities. So I thought I'd fill in the gap a little
bit.
There was a report on Uranus and then finally figuring out where the magnetic poles were.
Ah.
But I'll bet you didn't know Uranus had magnetic poles.
Well, doesn't every planet pretty much?
It does, if we're speaking about planets.
Ah, okay, there you go. Well, let me put it this way. Your other choice, now for everybody who doesn't know, the S&P futures back in the day, they had four expirations. There was the March, which is what that's the H's, right, Greg? And then there's the Junes, which are the M's, and then the September is the U, and the December is X, I think. Would you rather it be the sperms and be June?
I don't have any idea.
Well,
I guess it's, as I said, it's almost impossible for you to engage in these discussions without my...
I know.
Well, seventh grade mentality.
See, what you
taking over.
But what happens is whenever
do you still have that? Do you still have that mouse pad?
Yes.
That has all the pornographic.
Well,
movie terms on it?
With your mind, you immediately thought it was like four pages from the Kama Sutra.
What else was I going to look at when I was seeing something? You know, I looked at it on my mouse pad where I got my coffee cup from the Stocks and Jocks World Headquarters breakfast buffet. And I see, you know, split, squat, side, straddle, and
yeah,
I'm going, oh, that's an interesting term. What on earth are we looking at?
You're saying I can't wait to get home.
I was just going, what is happening in this ostensibly trading company that I don't know about?
Well, tilting Uranus.
Yes.
Well, that's right. Identifying the magnetic poles of Uranus would be part of that part of that process. I did, you know, I kept casting about looking for a hidden film studio or studio lights and maybe some cheap wallpaper and bad bedspreads or something.
Speaking
in the back,
of, well, I got to comment on that in a second, but you know what you're kind of what you're missing and where all this stuff came from is even though you lawyer dudes talk a lot, how's that for a shot? Because that's what you do for a living, talk in front of people. You don't yell. And when you yell, it's a whole different program for your body, meaning your voice and your voice box. So whenever you're yelling, you really have to minimize any kind of hard consonants, anything like that. Because if you do it all day long, that's where half the floor is off to the voice doctor at the afternoon. So you can't do that. So everything you do is a minimization of essentially hard sounds. Like even though it's half, three quarters, you never say three quarters because the Q sound buries your voice. It's the orders. The first time in a Florida guy goes, the order bid, and I go, what the hell is he talking about? You can't, if you said three quarter bid and yelled it out 50 times a day, I guarantee you, you would be at the voice guy that afternoon. So when the S&P futures came out, it just so happened that it was a month of September, which is the U. So it's SP/U. So it became SPOOS, which is easy to say. You're not gonna do the spexes like it was December, and you're not gonna do the sperms, even though that brings up another. The easiest. So even though it was a, it could be the March month or the June month, it was considered the SPOOS because it was the easiest one to say, despite what it also might come across as. But it was strictly a voice thing, because I know all kinds of guys that spent a fortune at voice doctors. And it's really, now I never had, everybody's sort of individual on this. I never had a problem with my voice yelling. But when you were younger, if I went to some like bar or someplace where there was a band in there and you had to talk real loud, the next day I was screwed. So I could yell, I just couldn't talk loud for a long period. Now other people, yelling is totally different than, there were guys that had to go to voice coaches to learn how to yell, because it's a totally different thing than just talking loud. It's weird, but you don't know what to do.
It makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, so it's all about that. I mean, it's all about syncopation of stuff. Like you would never, if you just said three quarter bid, you meant calls, because you didn't want to have to say calls all day. So if you said three quarter bid, you meant calls. But if you were put, you'd say puts. But if you didn't say anything, it meant calls when you said something. And also, if you didn't say anything, it was front month. If you say three-quarter bid 80s, that meant 80 calls, front month. If it wasn't that, you'd say three-quarter bid June puts. You had to say what it was if it wasn't the front month calls. It was all about minimizing what you had to say. I mean, there was some logic to it.
I guess after you utter these terms often enough, you get over the giggles.
Oh yeah,
that occur when somebody like me hears it and immediately, as I said, reverts back to my.
Well, the other best was the sign language on the various firms. One of the firms was a Drexel Burnham, because I don't know if they're around anymore. All the guy did was hire good-looking women. So when you gave up, if Lou did a trade, you would be. LOU, maybe that was your acronym. Now you also had a house. Maybe you were first stop. First stop was you tap some the top of the head. It was first stop. But if you were Drexel, you reached down and you looked like you were grabbing two boobs. Because that's and if you were Goldberg, you'd flip your nose like if it was Jewish, even though Dave Goldberg was Catholic. So everybody had their house, and so they weren't exactly politically correct, but you knew exactly who it was.
I would say probably not. Would be my guess, but that's
but you know what the only
that's
difference
an interesting
was
vestige I
trading
that
the Deutsche
Mark
was a little interesting too.
Yeah, well, you know, but you know, think of it as Lou. People had, I mean, everybody's so hung up. And a trading floor, if you didn't have a sense of humor, if you had a thin skin, you didn't belong there. I mean, they didn't care. I mean, how is this?
Because this is characteristic, I think, of traditional, predominantly male environments. How is this environment adapted to having women?
They, you know
in
what?
The area.
The women that first were there, they didn't want any protection. They could handle it. It didn't bother them at all. Didn't bother them at all.
What's happening now? Do you know?
Well, there is no trading floor.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure it's a lot different, but no. This is how bad it was. One guy comes in. What the hell's his name? Brian Kelly, nicest guy. He comes in. He had a big zit on his forehead. Right in the OEX pit. So somebody noticed it, and they went out at lunch and bought about 200 of those red dots, and everybody in the pit stuck a red dot on their forehead, the same place as it was. But this, you know, this was, but nobody cared.
Greg, you're just going to have to forgive me, but I think this sounds, and these acronyms sound more akin to my seventh grade interpretation.
But you know what? You're sitting in a room all day long.
Financial. You know, behemoth.
Lou, I can tell you, trading on a trading floor is 90% boredom, 10% panic. And the weird part is whenever you lengthen the day, that's why the one person is always going to bitch and moan about extending the hours. All you do is screw up the trading. Because the idea, there's a, even my, you know, my seventh grade humor here, there's always a reason for what I say stuff for.
And that goes back to the story that I was going to report about Uranus, and that is that Uranus rotates 28 seconds slower than we thought it did.
There you go.
There's the trading day extended on Uranus.
Well, but what then? What is your goal when you have a trading system? When I say that, I'm going to be somewhat technical here. Do you want the public to essentially price the system by supply and demand? And do you want a lot of public people like you and Greg and my clients, do you want them trading with each other, or do you want every single trade traded by a professional where they see it coming, get paid to do it, or pay somebody to give them the show? When you lengthen out the trading day, all you do is lengthen out the middle of the day where not much goes on. And so you have less and less interaction between public people. The crowd I used to trade in the OEX is probably the single best trading crowd for the public there ever existed. Over 60% of all the trades in the crowd were public to public. And I'm going to say right now, with the payment for order flow and all that stuff, and the preferencing and everything, I'm going to say, what do you think, Greg? Maybe 10% is public-public? Maybe? Somebody takes the other side, hangs down for a second, and if they don't like it, they puke it out to somebody else. It's a totally... The system is designed in such a way where virtually no public paper crosses with public, not none, but very little public paper crosses with public paper. And that's just, I think the system is that way is nowhere near as legit. I don't think it's anywhere near, I mean, if you traded 5 hours a day, where most of the trades were public to public in one spot, like the New York Stock Exchange used to be or the CBOE used to be, you would have a much better market than you have now. Not even close. So a lot of what I talk about is that. But you can imagine from 10:30 to 1:30, you got 1,000 people standing there looking for something to do. And what do you think? And some of the stuff, Lou, was hilarious. When Bob Dole came in to the floor, somebody put the, Greg, what do you call it when you roll the paper up and you got like a tail? Somebody put the tail on his shoes. He's walking around the floor with the tail. How did somebody do that with the Secret Service there? They had a guy who was a big-time bodybuilder. But what are the things behind your neck? Your traps? His traps are so big he couldn't put his collar down. So 10 times a day, some little nerd would run behind him and flip his collar up. Just to piss him off. And he'd have somebody to pull it down because he was so muscle-bound he couldn't put it down himself. This is stuff that went on all day.
So let me move us from that interesting sidelight to sports real quick, because I don't want to talk about tariffs today. Because nobody knows what's happening with tariffs.
Yeah. Well, so, we know this minute.
So yesterday marked at least the first formal declaration that I've seen of the NCAA, or at least college sports, trying to wrestle the NIL house settlement thing that's going on right now to the ground. They had a meeting with the four of the big major conference commissioners, SEC, Big Ten, Pac-12, and I can't remember what the other conference was, with Congress, and brought coaches and even some players along, but basically sat down with Congress, some senior Congress people, and said, you guys got to fix this. What they're trying to do, and the ostensibly the attack was on the NIL system and the portal system, and trying to set up some kind of method to regulate how athletes were going to be treated and how NIL money was going to be treated, whether we consider these people to be employees or something else, and try to bring some kind of stability to a system that is totally unregulated.
Why should it be regulated?
Pardon me?
Why should it be regulated?
Well, because the existing law does not adequately manage the distribution of money and talent and everything else that you want in a sports league. These guys are not pros.
Who's you?
When I say you, the people that are trying to run the programs, the coaches are throwing their hands up at what's happening with the portal system and unregulated athlete movement between clubs. The athletic directors are throwing their hands up saying, if we have to treat these kids like employees, it's going to completely destroy any aspect of our college sports programs because they're not employees. And the schools are saying, we got to get some kind of control here. We have to have some kind of stability or regulation that limits our financial exposure when we pay X amount to bring somebody in, and then they turn around and walk away on us.
We had this huge discussion. I wish you were around last night, Louis. We had this huge discussion in the local bar with a guy who was a college quarterback, and his kid is now as a ride, I believe, at Fordham of all places. And I said, I'm going to talk to my buddy Lou this morning. So I'm amazing your clairvoyance that you brought the topic up. My question is, I think, again, this is where I'm at, and you're the attorney, so correct me here. I think the NCAA is basically a eunuch in this. They can't come out necessarily with a rule because they're nobody. They're the kid. There's no collective bargaining or whatever. But my thought was, the Big East is not. The Big East, if it wanted to, I think, and correct me, could say exactly what you're talking about, is what we were talking about last night. The Big East could say, we're going to have our contract, our scholarship contract with people. We're going to be, if we're going to recruit you, we're going to guarantee you 2 years of tuition and whatever, or three. And by the way, you're going to guarantee us 3 years. And if somebody wants to poach you, they can, but they got to buy the contract, just like a minor. I think a conference could do that. Well, I don't think the NCAA can do that. Am I right or wrong?
Well, see, that's here's the issue. If you put something like, if all these clubs agree to something like that, there is a potential antitrust violation.
Well, that's why I want to stay with a conference, because you don't have to go to the Big East. You go where you want.
Well, that's right. But within the conference, I mean, a collusive activity within a conference could be challenged if DOJ or some state attorney general wanted to. And then one of the things those commissioners were asking for was an antitrust exemption. I know, but that's what they were asking for. They were because they can't. The way we this actually was the reason you brought me on initially in 2011 was to talk about what was happening with the NFL. Colleges can't set up the kind of labor relationships that the pro sports leagues can to drive an antitrust exemption to allow them to set compensation levels and things like that, and so there's a real antitrust issue. That's why this House settlement that's being debated in finalized in California is so important, because that's an antitrust that basically voids antitrust liability for the schools that are going to be affected by it, and the way they're going to be affected by it. But limiting portal, portal transfers, or limiting athlete compensation, or things like this, could be seen, if somebody wanted to make an issue out of it, could be seen as an antitrust issue.
Look,
so one of the things they were asking for was exempt us from antitrust.
Why? Let me ask you a question. I know we, your bailiwick is on this law stuff. And by the way, that's why I can't wait for you to be on every Thursday. Mine is economics. Let me give you an example of, it probably was the same thing with guys going to law school. When I got out of University of Chicago, I went to Allied Van Lines to work. Everybody, if you'd have walked in, my name's Lou Michaels, I'm at Allied Van Lines, I'm at Pullman, I'm at wherever the hell I'm at. Schmo. If you say, I want to go get my MBA at University of Chicago, they're going to say, knock yourself out, we'll be happy to pay for it. And it was $3,000 a year. It wasn't a pimple of an elephant's ass. And there was no quid pro quo, there was nothing. As long as you went and didn't flunk, they gave you
Uranus. There's a Uranus joke in there somewhere, yeah. But I'm not going to make it.
But I'm saying they would go, and they reimburse you for the tuition. All of a sudden, 2 years later, University of Chicago is $5,000. Then it's $7,000. Then it's $9,000. And all of a sudden, they go, whoa, Mr. Michaels, we'd love to have you at an MBA from University of Chicago, but let me help you. If we're paying for it, you owe us 2 years, or you're giving us the tuition back. Now, why can't...
I've written those contracts, by the way.
Yeah, it's simple. Why can't... If I'm going to... Matter of fact, the dude last night brought up every Mid-America school. If they find any diamond in the rough, they're going to recruit them, they're going to train them, they're going to feed them, they're going to have them weight training, they're going to do all that crap, and they're easy to get poached after 2 years.
Yep.
Which is the same thing as somebody poaching me out of Allied Van Lines after I got my MBA. Why can't that school just say, we're investing X in you, and if you leave before 2 years, maybe it's 3 years, you owe us X number back because this is our investment. Why can't they just do it on their own? Why do they need this antitrust exemption? The rest of the world doesn't need it.
That's one way of doing it. But the thing is, if you do that by yourself, as an individual school, you're at a huge recruiting disadvantage.
But until everybody else goes, I don't want to do it either. That's the whole mess with this thing, Lou, is that schools seem to be willing to take a massive loss for athletics. And we've seen, other guests on the show, talk about, if I'm going, I'll pick a place, Notre Dame, $80,000. Okay, why? If I'm there for my education, if I'm there for yucks and something, giggles, I guess, my dad's got the $80,000, I guess I'll pay it. But if I'm there for an education, if you and I decided, Kevin's all over this. If we bought an old high school here in Chicago, fixed it up, and said this is going to be X business school, and got real good people, and by the way, our business school is going to be $15,000 a year, and not 50. We're going to have great. why should I pay for the girls or guys fencing team to go for free? What? Well, how does that benefit me at all? I guess it's this college experience. Now football. Allegedly, they claim they're making money. A lot of the schools are. I think a lot of schools aren't, by the way. I think a lot of schools aren't making money on basketball. Why am I paying for that? If I want to play basketball, I go down to the park. At some point here, you look at it and say, what are we doing here?
I agree. And I think I've told you, I think given the way the law is moving and given the way these court decisions are moving, that you're rapidly going to head in the direction of these athletic programs will simply be club sports that will have some kind of nominal affiliation with the school, but are going to be run as professional clubs,
or just be, if you want to, like in Europe, you want to play soccer, you play on a soccer team. You don't go to a university expect to get paid to play soccer. One, they're totally separate things,
right? But that's going to require a cultural shift that I don't see happening anytime soon.
Let me ask you this. Do you want
to identify the trust me, the Europeans have absolutely no concept about our college sports system.
Do you feel, my guys are still rabid about Notre Dame, but I tell you what, Lou, they're shifting. They're shifting. They're, They were all over every single one of the girls' games this year because they like basketball, and girls' basketball is good basketball. You know, people come dunking or anything. It's still good basketball. After what's happened this year and everybody leaving, pretty much everybody. I mean, Kevin will say it's not everybody. But now there are going to be all new people this year. They're like, wait a minute. What happened to my team? Or a couple of them graduated. I mean, I don't want 12 new people here every year, and I'm supposed to, just because they got the Notre Dame sticker on their forehead doesn't make them, it's not like me sitting in class next to Dave Casper and wanting to see him do well on a Saturday and wanting to see the team win, right? The guy, he looked bored, economics class, I guess so did I if he looked at me, but he was at least there, and he was a student, and I played poker and golf with the hockey players, it's not like that anymore.
I understand, and this, the colleges recognize this, Tom, and this is why you see them showing up at Congress, where sitting down and saying, we want to preserve, because it's important for our college experience, quote-unquote college experience, it's important for us to have these teams that are functional and that people want to support. And, oh, by the way, it makes us mega bucks. It gets us donors. It lets us, shop people who are going to give us lots of money into sports suites and stadium packages and the whole bit. But the system right now is breaking down, as you and I have discussed, I think almost every other week. It's breaking down, and they are trying to maintain some semblance of collegiate college ties to these programs.
Well, money wise, it's not breaking down at all, at least not yet.
But it's breaking down for the reason that you just described, that fan interest is going to go away because these kids are leaving after a year or even less with no ties to the school, and there's a loyalty element that attaches to a college sports team that causes you to come back to the school, causes you to give it money, causes you to support it, causes you to act as a recruiter for it, and for better or worse, the people that are concerned about this look at a collegiate experience that they had that involves, Saturday night at the basketball arena, Saturday afternoon at the football stadium, taking pride in sitting down with a kid next to you in class who's an All-American swimmer or an All-American fencer or a rugby player or a lacrosse player. And all of that is part and parcel of the American college experience. And what's happening right now in collegiate sports is cutting into the heart of that and undermining it.
We think, you and I, think that in the long run it might cut into that. But the thing that you got to be... can't be half a gangster, Lou. You can't have the Notre Dame program or the Alabama program all of a sudden whining how the student or the student athletes are getting that piece. There's no way you cut those people back, and next year your skybox number goes up 40% like it or 20% like it did last year. There's no way you want to balance these books. We want to make it so Lou and Tom want to show up at their school's games next year. So we're going to make it so the student can't leave. But by the way, here's your skybox bill, Lou or Tom. You can't go that route, Lou. Can't do that. Can't be halfway.
Well, I tend to agree with you, but that again, that's why you see this push for some kind of regulation, because if you let the market, and this is the same issue that the sports leagues, the pro leagues confronted, 45, 50 years ago. Baseball still hasn't confronted it. NBA not so well. The NFL big time. If you let the market run this, you will end up with, four or five teams that dominate in every sport, every year, all the time.
Okay, let's attack that for a second. There are schools that, and I'm going to say, I don't know, you pick a number, you know more than I do. There are schools right now that don't give a rat's ass about the student experience for the players, or they just want the best guys they can, or girls, and for the minimum amount of money, and they want to cut their bargaining out. Do you think Alabama or Auburn gave a rat's ass about whether those kids went to school on the basketball team? Now, you're not going to get back into the, I don't know if you listened to Bill Moriarty the other day. Bill's very tight with Marquette. The guy at Marquette, what's his name, Shaka or something, doesn't want to do the portal. They don't want to pay guys a whole bunch. They don't want to do that. Okay, guess what? His view that people should really actually be students, it should be, let's say, an enhanced extracurricular activity because there's money made, the guy should be paid something, or girls. That's kind of where I think you and I are. But the people, the 10 or 12 or 20 schools that are way beyond that, Lou, they don't care what we think. They don't care if it's,
right. And they're going, and that's the comment that these directors are, and the athletic directors are saying, is if you let the market run like this, the diversity of viewpoint on how we treat college athletics means that we're going to end up with a race to the bottom.
Well,
in terms of
maybe
of
race to
the
top.
Just described.
But if Alabama wants to use their team as the Chicago Bears of Alabama, I don't know how why they have to behave the same as Marquette.
Well, the thought process, and maybe this won't happen, but the thought process is if you don't control that, if you allow that to run rampant, then you very quickly end up with non-competitive leagues, and people stop going to the games.
Well, maybe not. Here's a ridiculous. In Chicago softball, when it was a religion, Lou, there were A leagues where you had a bet in every game where everybody was like really good, and there were B leagues where people went and enjoyed themselves and people went out and watched. There's nothing that says if Alabama and 15 teams like them, whether Notre Dame wants in or wants out, is going to be their decision. They want to run a quasi professional sport, let them. Just have other people be able to do it their way.
Well, and I think. Again, the problem, and this is your gangster point. The problem is that this is tied not to a purely pro sports league, but it's tied to a college.
Sort of.
So you want to maintain the collegiate link, which means you are ostensibly using student athletes. And
there's a stretch for somebody's place.
Well, I'm just telling you.
Oh, I know.
This is the picture. And if you're these two goals are incompatible. You're either in school and have been for decades. I mean, my father was an All-American in college. And he talked about guys getting payoffs and stuff.
Not on the same plane.
Well, not in the 1950s. No, it wasn't. But the tension was always there. I think I've referenced some guy named, I think it's Huffelfinger was the name he played under, Pudge Huffelfinger.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He was a pro football player who played for, because he was being paid, but he would rotate between college teams in the Ivy Leagues back in the 1890s.
Oh yeah.
He would go play for Yale 1 week for $50, and then he'd go play for Harvard 1 week, and then he'd go play for Brown, and then so this has been going on forever. We kind of had a gentleman's agreement that said we're going to turn a blind eye to the under the table payments, but don't let it get out of hand. All right. So what we're doing now with NIL is it's getting out of hand.
Well, when Eric Parseghian coached, he made $60,000 a year, and I think some of the players. Matter of fact, Notre Dame got in trouble for stuff. But the stuff was, you made everybody wear a sport coat when they got on the bus, and some kids couldn't afford a sport coat. Or one kid, his uncle died, and somebody gave him bus fare. We're not talking about the coach making $8 million and saying the kids should still be students. We're not even on the same plane.
I agree. The economic inequities that were bad were in place back then were crazy. I mean, it was I can't remember the name of the coach. It may have been Majerus at Utah, who some kid's father died. And so Majerus took the kid out to get a pizza and to just sit down with him and commiserate with him before he put him on an airplane to go home. And they suspended him for, or penalized him for for buying the kid a pizza.
Well, I've never given the Irish a dime athletic stuff. And if I were to meet with a recruit, not even knowing he was a recruit, that would be considered a meeting. And right. If they had three, that would be like a fine.
Right. And
so, we're so far beyond that now, we're not even.
No, it's ridiculous. They have agents in college now.
But my cousin, he just, his 90th birthday, praise the Lord. He was he went to Tilden Tech, and he went to Colorado on a halfback. He ran track, and he played halfback. And I guess he played deep back because we went both ways. And he said he had a guy, you know, that if he needed $50 or what do you say? I think he said you had an open tab at like this men's store downtown or someplace, where if you need a pair of slacks, you go get them. Because nobody went down there and bought like five suits or anything. But he still had with a scholarship. He was in Air Force ROTC, so he could make a few bucks. I mean, yeah. Did he end up with a polo shirt out of the deal? Probably. But I mean, he never got anything for free that I saw, and he had to serve. You had to serve how many years after ROTC? What do you got to give him, 4 years or something? I mean, yeah. So it wasn't like... So, I mean, yeah, did he have a guy? Was there a few bucks someplace? I'm sure he'd love to come out here and tell us about it, but it's nothing like this.
Well...
How many of these kids are in ROTC, for God's sake? None.
Right. None, because they can make money like this. And you've got... You know, we've talked about this, but this kind of dichotomy... Are we students? Are we athletes? No, we're both. And so now you've got a constant tension. And I think as you noted, the whole student part is disappearing very rapidly in the face of how much money is pouring in about the athlete part. And yet the schools want to maintain that fiction because that's what, frankly, that's what brings in the revenue.
I think Lou. Well, by the way, you and I have, I've been doing some research on this, so I'm gaining on you here. I think the idea of the revenue, matter of fact, this discussion came up last night. If you love sports, you're somewhat misguided on the revenue. And I'm not going to argue, because Notre Dame for years, if you wanted tickets, you had to send them $100 to be in the pool. And I don't doubt that the contributions to your athletic department kind of go with having at least a team or a good team and so forth. But if you actually look at schools that don't have very good teams and you look at some of the contributions to, quote, the school over the last 5, 10, 15 years, there's like no correlation whatsoever. I looked at Indiana, which, you know, this year they had a decent football team. For the first time, like ever, their basketball team has sucked for 30 years. They used to have a great swimming team. Nobody even knows they have a swimming team anymore. They've had in the last 5 to 10 years the biggest contributions in their history for everything educational that has nothing to do with athletics. I mean, you know, $30 million here, $50 million there. It's unbelievable. So the idea that if Duke all of a sudden had a horse bleep basketball team, you might get people not sending money to the athletic program, but Duke University is going to be fine, because the guy giving $50 million for a new medical wing doesn't give a rat's ass about the basketball team. Or if he does, it's not why he's doing it. I would disagree. I know you do. So we're. But I'm saying if you look at the contributions over. I'm not talking about the athletic department. If you look at the contributions overall to UCLA, to Southern Cal, to Nebraska, to Wisconsin. They are so far and above these schools. The budget of Wisconsin is almost $8 billion a year. They're lucky to make money on a football team. If they do, it's chicken feed compared to what the university spends.
I will just tell you that every one of these schools, and this is why the push to maintain these athletic departments is so significant. Every one of these schools looks at what happened to George Mason, at what happened to Duke, at what happened to Vanderbilt when their athletic programs took off. They suddenly had this inrush of not just money, of students who wanted to go there. I mean,
I didn't say it was worthless.
I'm just telling you, don't
assume that because Vanderbilt has all of a sudden a good football team and people up their ticket prices and show up and spend money for the athletic department. Saying separate that from all the rest of the money that goes to Vanderbilt for medical research and all that stuff. And you'll find that sometimes they don't need it.
Sometimes they don't. But every one of these athletic directors and every one of these school presidents believes that a winning athletic program, especially in one of the high visibility sports, is a fantastic draw.
I guarantee you that every athletic department chairman thinks that. I'm saying
but the universities do too, and they've got numbers to back it up. Let me just throw something out for you. The military academies, the service academies, who have, you know, every reason to maintain this duopoly of student athlete concept of status, even they understand this, because one of the things that they do is they cut guys loose from their active duty service commitments if they're good enough to play pro sports. So you owe 5 years or 10 years if you go to flight training, but you owe 5 years to the academy or to the service. But if you get drafted by an NBA team or a baseball team or an NFL team, and I think hockey too, and golf, and there's one other one or a couple other ones. But anyway, if you get into a pro sports league and you get drafted or you get to sign a contract, they will cut you loose. Then now your service commitment, you basically, what happens is they move you from an active duty contract for 5 years to a reserve contract for a reserve status for, I think it's 8 years.
So if something happened, they could call you.
You're putting the uniform on every month and going to work somewhere. But you know why they do that? Is because of the publicity. They know this. They've studied this. I've seen the studies. A Chad Hennings, who was an Outland Trophy winner and played for the Dallas Cowboys, they cut him. Now, they were following the law at the time, which was he had to serve 2 years, and then he could go play pro. The Air Force tells you they got more free publicity out of that than an entire 5 years worth of advertising campaigns on NASCAR and whatever.
We're not really disagreeing, Lou. We're just looking at different parts of the chessboard. But
I know
I know that. Well, hell, I went to Notre Dame. All of a sudden, they have a football team. Probably nobody mentioned the name. I mean, I get it, but I'm saying don't take it all the way. Is all I'm saying. There's no question that if Alabama all of a sudden decided, well, we don't care if we win anymore, the people showing up at the park, the amount of tickets sold, all that other kind of stuff is going to drop dramatically. All I'm saying is don't confuse that necessarily with the size of the Alabama operation. Or matter of fact, I'll bet you a double espresso somewhere that in the last 10 years, the donations to the University of Indiana are higher than they are at Alabama. Not the athletic department, but the university.
I don't know that.
I don't either. I'm saying that's why it's a bet.
But at the same time, I do know that the caliber and interest in your school, because every one of these schools is competing for students, that gets a lot easier to recruit with a high visibility program.
I'm agreeing with you, and I'm also saying, all I'm saying is, Luke, don't take it too far, because these athletic people like to take it too far, and I'm one of them, by the way. My inclination is to agree with you, and yet every time I look at the numbers, I go, maybe we're not as right as we think we are. That's all I'm saying.
My point is, this is the motivation that's driving this in large part.
Okay, but
because
who's
of the impact that these programs have on these schools.
The us is you and me that spent, if we could go play softball today, I would do it. I'd love it. That we're sports guys, right? So our motivation, I'm just saying, our vision is clouded, is all I'm saying. A little bit. Because we love that stuff. There might be some lady who never, or a guy who never played sports a day in his life that's writing a check today to Wisconsin for a new wing in the medical facility. You know, it could care less if they even have a team, or maybe doesn't even know they have a team. I'm just saying, let's not take it too far, is all I'm saying.
I agree.
And you know, and on the other stuff, I think, Lou, if 25 schools want to have a totally different vision of the student athlete and want to pay a hell of a lot more and not really even have a thing with being a school, I think you just got to let those 25 schools go. I don't know what you do. They want to be a pro league, go be a pro league.
And that's I think where we're headed.
Yeah,
we've talked about this where BlackRock or somebody comes in and says we're going to fund a 70-team league, and you guys, the rest of you guys, can go play college football and have your tailgate parties on Saturday afternoons. But those of us in this program are going to be out to make money, and we're going to be out to have a playoff system.
Yeah, and I don't have any problem with the Big East or whatever else. I kind of wish Irish were still in the Big East. If they want to say, look, this, we want to be colleges. We're going to share the wealth. We're not going to make a gazillion dollars. The problem comes down is somebody somewhere, meaning everybody, wants to have this, quote, NCAA tournament, where we're somehow or another we're making believe that the basketball program at Duke or at Alabama or Auburn now is the same as the one at, you know, God knows where, St. Bonaventure or someplace. Well, guess what? It's not. You know, and to try and put them all in the same pot, maybe you have an NCAA for the 32 schools that are going to be in there every year because that's what they're doing, and the other people just have their own. It'll be the NIT for everybody else.
I mean, yeah, that may be where we're moving. I mean, you know, the Ivy Leagues have maintained what you and I would consider to be non-competitive sports programs for decades, and it's, you know, Saturday afternoons, it's a social thing. And you go out to watch a football game on Saturday afternoon for guys who are playing just because they like to play, and you know, they don't offer scholarships. Well, they don't.
Well, they don't charge you tuition if you happen to play football. They call it an academic ride.
Well, they have.
Didn't the Bonnies hire Woj as their athletic director or whatever? Wojnarowski from ESPN.
I think, yeah, plus some of the guys playing in the for these real big teams got poached in the Ivy League, right? One kid came from Yale.
Yep.
Well, that's another problem. I mean, you're not going to do that if you're going to get poached. Why should
this is another, again, this is why these athletic directors were at Congress saying we need to figure out some way to do this, and we need antitrust protection so that we can stop.
How about a salary cap?
Set up a system to stop this. Well, they're going to have a salary cap.
Whatever everybody wants.
That's the House settlement. House settlement is a salary cap system for NIL.
But you and I,
who sets the cap though?
Let me throw this in there, Greg. Though, why do we constantly need this congressional antitrust? Lou, you and I can start a baseball.
Big money.
I'm saying, listen to me for a second. If we buy the Crestwood Flyers, wherever all those guys are. It's a minor league baseball team, not affiliated. They hold tryouts every week. If they get somebody who's good, they sign them up. They sign a contract. Maybe it's a year, year and a half. And by the way, they're gonna, if they think the kid's pretty good, he's gonna get to play. He's gonna get coaching. He's gonna get practice. He's gonna get uniforms. All the other crap that goes with it. And if the kid turns out to be good, and the Cubs want him, guess what? I don't think it's $1 million, but they got to pay the guy.
They do.
So why they don't have to go to Congress? This is regular business. Why do they have to go to Congress and get a deal?
Well, because they're not tied in with other clubs on something like this. They're not at a competitive within their league. Well, they're not at a competitive disadvantage with that kind of program.
But if I'm saying if we go back to the first part of the conversation, if Harvard or Yale does this to some kid. Say they give him an academic ride he didn't believe because or didn't deserve because he plays football or basketball. They have a 4-year deal with the guy. The Alabama wants him. Guess what? Alabama, here's what we spent on the kid so far. You owe us $500,000.
Sure.
But why not?
And Columbia or Yale says, you know what? We don't have that kind of requirement. You can come play for us anytime.
Yeah,
that's the difference between public and private.
Okay, but
too.
I'm saying that's the thing. The fact is the guy in Crestwood has made a thing on this because he did hold the tryout. He did all this stuff, and the guys are willing to sign that. Hey, I got to get some exposure with you.
But that's fine. Unless Crestwood is offering something really special in its program, it's at a competitive disadvantage for other players in other schools or other teams who go and say, you don't have to sign that contract to play with us. You can come play here and leave anytime.
But nobody's going to do that.
Yes, they will.
Who's going to do that?
And they have.
No, I'll guarantee you, not guarantee you, I would say very strongly, like I am, no team like Crestwood is going to do all that stuff for somebody and let the guy just go to the Cubs. Nobody's that stupid. So if you're a Mid-America team like Miami of Ohio or someplace, and you get some kid who looks like he's big and strong, but he's kind of gangly, and all of a sudden by 2 years, you've shaped that kid in, well, himself too, you've shaped him into the second best tight end in the country. I think you need, just like the guy with the NBA program, I think if the kid's going to leave and never play a year down for you, why should you eat that?
I agree, but the concern is that doing that in a coordinated fashion is going to damage or is going to open them up to antitrust. Let me answer Greg's question.
Okay.
The salary cap, the NIL salary cap. There's a whole administrative system, Greg, that has been established as part of this House settlement that is going to monitor not only how much money people are getting and set that cap each, the NIL cap each year, they're going to monitor cheating, they're going to monitor whatever. And of course, what that's going to do immediately is it's going to generate the back to the old system that we had with, you know, envelopes full of cash being handed to a kid under the table at Applebee's. Because if you can't make the salary cap, or if you are over your NIL cap for the year, and you want to bring some special guy in and hold him, you're going to pay him more.
It's interesting how they've considered this.
Split that off, though, Lou. Which piece of it are you talking about? Are we talking about what the schools can pay people?
Yes, the NIL cap will be school specific.
Okay,
and
but
it'll be a pool of money. I think it's something like $20 million.
That's coming from like the donors and so forth. But now, that doesn't stop the young ladies from Notre Dame, who happen to be intelligent and pretty attractive as a group, getting a deal to go on a State Farm commercial, does it?
Yes, it will.
They
can do it, but they're going to have a limited amount of money.
That will never fly. That's been shut down already.
No, what's going to happen is that's going to go to the university, and they're going to redistribute
it. That will never fly.
I'm just telling you that's where it's going to go, and that NIL.
We have another bet. I could send you in front of the court tomorrow. You win that case by lunchtime.
I'm just telling you that's how they've got it set up. That's part of the settlement.
So
they're capping all of it.
So Hannah Hidalgo cannot is prohibited from getting a deal from Red Bull. That will not happen.
If she goes and signs an individual deal, that money and is paid something, that money will count toward the school's NIL cap.
That's the whole thing they lost in the first place, where they wouldn't let a guy go out and get a job as a model or something.
The skier. That's where the settlement's
going. How long would it take you in court to
campaign
to
finance?
I can see you walking in with the judge's ruling from 5 years ago, Lou, and say, do we really need to spend our time here? The judge reads it and goes, no, get out of here. How easy would it be for you to fight that one?
I'm just telling you, this is going to be entered into as part of a settlement, so it's going to be blessed by a federal judge out in California.
How far back does this go? Is Dave Casper going to get a check 50 years ago?
Casper's not going to get a check, but they're reaching back, I think, 10 years. This is the this
who
is
decided
why they
that?
Had they had objective. The court did. They had objective set. They had a settlement conference earlier this week. They had testimony from a number of athletes, including Livy Dunn from LSU, who said, "You're not measuring my NIL accurately. You're not even close." And the judge basically said, look, you can try to fix this a little bit more, but the only thing I'm settling here is the antitrust stuff. I'm not settling Title IX or any other issues, just antitrust. And Ms. Dunn, I understand that they underestimated your revenue by over $1 million a year, but you'll have to take that up with this, you know, the school separately.
Next week, maybe you can explain this whole settlement, because
It's not finalized yet, but it's pretty close.
So somebody who's a second string tackle from 5 years ago is going to get a check. How the hell do you figure that out?
They could. It's based on some kind of a formula that the court is getting finalized.
Is it per game, per practice, per year?
I think it's team member, based on team membership.
So if you're If you never got in the game, you're going to get a check. And whereas a guy who maybe needs three knee surgeries because he was in all the game, he's not going to get any more.
I don't know how they factor that in there, but my understanding is for the athletes that were, there is some adjustment for the superstars or people like that.
The let's kind of shift gears here a hair, and the market. Well, again, this is
what is that? I mean, it's not me.
It's Andrew Krieg.
I don't know that. Maybe. Hey, Lure, are we running over time? Let's we're not, but we got another couple minutes. Let's talk about it. I don't know. See, I don't necessarily. How is it? This is why I love what you do for a living. You and I are agreeing on everything here, and yet it sounds like we're not, because there's so many iterations to it, right?
Well, and that's because we've moved our conversation away from topics like Uranus.
God. Well, all I'm saying is most of the weird stuff you hear on the trading floor has to do with the syncopathy. Speaking in a way that doesn't wreck your voice.
Yeah, I think it's obscenity practice. Well,
I got a good one for you. I'll try and clean it up. We had nothing to do one day, and one of the guys, he's been on the show.
Greg, get the kill switch ready.
We had a guy. He's been on the show a couple times. We called him Coach because he was a coach. Coach was a brilliant guy, but what a character. And there's this girl in the pit, and she says, I'll clean it up, she says, Coach, when's the last time you had sex? And Coach looks at her and he goes, you know, a fat, balding, poor guy broke, I can't even have sex with my wife. He goes, now if I had dough, they'd work with me. I'm sitting there going, he just didn't say that. I was dying laughing a little. If I had dough, they'd work with me. just the way he said it, I'm like, where did that come from? But I tell you what, when you're hanging around people that are that smart, and half of them are totally off, they're totally off the gene pool, and how smart they are and how wacky they are, you hear some of the funniest stuff.
Oh, yeah.
What I wouldn't give for one more day at the trading pit, it was entertaining. We had 350 people in our pit. You can only imagine what it's like.
Can you see how many people we've got signed up on our feed here right now?
Probably just one up.
I see four people on the.
Oh, we've got Andrew and we've got Wayne.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. We'll talk. Are you? My buddy Bill tells me his gang is still out in Park City. Is there still snow?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And we'll probably get some more. It's going to get warm this week, but. We'll probably get some more before the end of April. Another big one more big storm coming in before the end.
Now,
of
after
April.
That, does it rain or just stops?
It pretty much stops, except for the kind of isolated thunderstorm stuff you get in. We don't, we're very much a slave to the atmospheric rivers that come across from Washington or California. So,
be way more snow than rain is over the course of a full year.
Yes, yeah. And so we'll get some. It'll start raining up there, probably in, beginning of May. We'll see. We may get two more little snow dustings, a couple of inches, but we should have one more big storm before the end of April.
Hey, do me a favor, will you? Next week, 10 minutes of the show. What's going on with since gold is now way the hell up here? What's going on with the gold guys by you? Is that causing more activity or anything like that? Next week, let's cover that for like 10 minutes if you don't mind, because I know.
I will tell you that the gold mine that operates near my place in Cripple Creek is running double shifts right now.
Really? Well, let's dig into that a little more next week, because I'll give you a little chart for the gold and everything. So SP Futures down 88, NASDAQ Futures down 373. What do you say we go to like a 2-second break and bring in Wayne and Andrew?
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures down 94, NASDAQ futures down 400. This is after this massive move yesterday, the likes of which I don't think I've ever seen. I mean, we were down in the morning, we were down during the show, down a lot overnight, and then all of a sudden the president came out and said last Friday, Greg, that there might be a 90-day pause, and then it was the White House said it was fake news. Well, it wasn't fake news yesterday, and the market just turned around and ripped. I mean, just ripped. I bought, just to cover some calls, in the QQQ at 6 cents, it closed at $21. Now, you might say to yourself, self, why did you just cover those? Why didn't you, like, buy a few extra just for laughs? Greg, where would you put it on the scale of moves you've seen since you've been in the business? It's got to be right up there, bud.
Yeah, that was as big as we've seen.
We're talking 10%. It brought up an interesting question. We're going to get to Wayne and Andrew in a second. Are there no, stops on the way up? On the way down, at 7%, there's a pause, and, or is it 5, 7, and 10 or something, and you stop at 10? On the way up, there's no pauses at all? There's no stop circuit breakers? Evidently not, huh?
No. We
up
were
is good
for
huh?
the 7, and it never happened.
Oh, God. All right, guys. I liked it better when you guys were in studio, but we'll just have to make do. How are you guys?
Oh, pretty good.
Doing great.
See, now, if you were here, we could go for breakfast afterward. I'd have to come back and trade. You guys could have a couple of Bloody Marys, and everybody would be happy.
Hey, sounds like a plan. We'll put that on a calendar.
I think you guys go down to Florida. You kind of go down there and then just kind of hang there. It's like, you play golf every day, have a big dinner every night, a couple of umbrella drinks, and you're happy.
Yeah, that's what some people do here.
Now, did you guys get the call from the White House and be able to front run that yesterday a little bit, make a few shekels?
I didn't. I'm just wondering why. Trump said everybody started getting yippy with him, and I haven't heard the term yippy since the Youth International Party back in the 1960s.
Yeah. That was the guys from Michigan too, right?
Yeah, I think they were. Andy,
wasn't that Abby Hoffman and those guys?
Yeah. Abby Hoffman, right?
We actually had a dude on the trading floor. Was named Todd Weingart, and his acronym is YPE. He was Yippie forever because of his acronym. But speaking of trading floor stuff, I did something that you guys probably already have done. Somehow or another, I stumbled across a Dick Cavett interview from 1988. Somehow Trump was on his show. And all he did was talk about then was how other companies are ripping us off because we have trade imbalances. Where in his education does he find, and I'm not saying every country doesn't cheat on their trade. Some do it. Does he ever get the idea that every single time we buy something from somebody else, somehow they're screwing us? I mean, where does that come from? Is there any basis to that someplace that you know of?
Well, I think, he says, well, if we buy from other countries, we have this deficit. Well, I have a deficit with my local grocery store. So I don't know.
I mean, it's just an odd way of... It's an odd way of thinking because the idea, I mean, obviously, I think I have a deficit with the saloon downstairs, unfortunately. But the whole idea is you give money, they give you a beer. that money's going to be spent somewhere else, somewhere else, somewhere else, and someplace it might land on somebody who turns around and becomes a client of mine. Isn't that the way the world's supposed to work? Not to say that some countries don't cheat, and you got to be careful that they don't, and I think he's pretty good at you know, finding those places, but just the idea that every single time you buy something from somebody, somehow they're screwing you, I honestly don't get it, but it really seems to be driving a lot of what's happening, or am I just wrong on that?
Well, one way to look at it, it maybe comes from a sense of grievance, not economic study. So you studied economics at a top place. And I just heard a very interesting story here in Washington by a quite distinguished lawyer who had gone to Fordham. And he told me at lunch at the press club that he challenged Trump, why doesn't he donate money to Fordham, where Trump started out before transferring to the University of Pennsylvania? And so when you mentioned, Tom, Trump's education or where it comes from, we barely know what his education was. There's a sense of, oh, University of Pennsylvania, Wharton's school. But one thing we know is that's undergraduate, but we don't know how he did and what he studied and so forth. So I just toss that out.
Well, because it's certainly an odd view. I mean, the idea that we had actually one of the regular guests on the show was talking about how we import all his beef from Australia. And somehow or another, I guess there's some quotas on our beef going there. And yet, our trade balance with Australia, we have a massive surplus of stuff we sell them versus we buy from them. So even though you pull this, you know, beef one basically out of your behind, we sell them all kinds of military stuff. We sell them all kinds of other stuff. At the end of the day, we're net positive by like $20 billion.
So as of now, we still got the 10% tariff on the herd in McDougal Island, which has only penguins.
Yeah, but see, now the part you're not getting, those are liberal penguins. they voted for Biden.
But they do dress very formal.
They do. I don't for the idea, and I have, you know, a lot of people, we have a lot of conservative guys on the show, obviously. And the idea that somehow or another, if somebody is screwing you tech-wise, okay, I mean, China, let's face it, China's done everything they possibly can to screw up trade. I mean, they'll put a Wayne Mattson badge on a car over there and say it's a Wayne, right? They'll cheat no matter what they can. And they've been doing it for years. I mean, everybody kind of knows that, right? But also, they seem to be willing to pollute the hell out of their place and have child labor and slave labor, making stuff cheaper, and we got people here that are not doing all that well economically that are more than willing to buy the shot glass for $2 less from China than somewhere else. So it's kind of a, you know, it's a problem that is kind of all the way through the system. It's not just them cheating. I mean, if you had a family of 8 kids, I think you're going to probably want to buy your T-shirt from Vietnam because it's cheaper than one made here. Doesn't make it right, but I mean, it's such a multifaceted problem, and the more I dig into it, the more complex it is, and yet these guys are trying to make it sound like it's simple, and it just isn't, I don't think. And what about the place that the guys that, when he was first in office, moved some of their facilities from China to Vietnam, and now they put a tariff almost as big in Vietnam, which I guess came off yesterday. I mean, it makes it very difficult to do business. The whole idea is the three of us, instead of being on the show, are supposed to be at the bank getting a loan for a new factory to do this stuff. Well, how the hell, if we went yesterday and got the loan and we walk out and all of a sudden the tariffs are gone for 90 days, do we really want the loan or don't we?
You got to wonder who's in charge of policy there. Now, the word out last night was that Peter Navarro, you know, the guy that did some time in the federal lockup in Miami, that he's now in great disfavor with Trump. And he may be getting a boot very soon. We know that we know that Navarro and Elon Musk went at each other in sort of like fifth grade manner. Not that I disagree. Maybe one time I actually agree with Musk on something. You know, I think a lot of this is driven by the fact that there's no cohesive policy. Now, Trump, after he announced the pause, Charles Schwab was in the Oval Office, and he said, it was great to make money. Now you got calls among some Democrats in Congress about insider trading and how many people in the administration knew he was going to tank the market and then announce a 90-day pause. So I don't think anything's going to happen because the Justice Department is now made up of his own personal lawyers. But
I got to believe yesterday, put it this way, if the three of us, and we'll take Greg with us, if we were in this administration and had any indication of what, I bet it's a small group, of what he was going to say, if we wouldn't be retiring by now, we'd be like really bad traders. Like I said, there was stuff yesterday we bought. Again, we didn't go long, unfortunately. We covered stuff at 6 cents. They closed at $21. It's $2,000 a one lot.
Huh.
That's like real money.
Yeah,
hundred lot, you know, $200,000. That's pretty good.
Well, exactly. And who would know?
Well, do you think he tells people, or he just? You think with his personality, you guys know better than me. Do you think possibly he didn't tell anybody?
Well, whoever was on his Signal chat probably found out. You know, probably Pete Hegseth and a few others. But I think it's all part of the grift. What did people know, and when did they know it? The age-old Washington question when it comes to scandals.
Well, there would be people. Let me ask this question, Andrew. Yeah. There would be people who would think that any time you would do something like that, there'd be a big meeting and say, "What are you guys hearing?" And the guys going, "Hey, look, whatever you're doing to the market, whatever the long-term goal is here, right now, I couldn't win my district tomorrow at all." Or some business people saying, "You're going to have us broke before it works." I mean, I could see a big feedback thing like that, and then somebody, I mean, this is how maybe we would operate, and then say, okay, do we need to push these off for 90 days? Are we going too far, too fast? And if that was the conclusion, then you would have as many people in the room, say 20, 30, whatever how big those rooms are out there, that would know something before you open your mouth. Now, do you give those guys 30 minutes to make a trade? Or is this guy capable of just saying, I've seen enough, I'm turning around myself? Because from what I read this morning, he got real concerned with the bonds racing down. The bonds are getting hammered. So, you know, your interest rates are going way up, which is what he doesn't like. Apparently, that was the last straw, that the bond prices were going way down. Now, what do you guys think of what I just said? Is he capable of just doing that all on his own, or do you think people knew or not? I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, let me jump in on that, Tom. I think he's capable of it, but also when we think from all the movies and actual real life stuff we know about how powerful people sometimes work, it can often be a hint. So it doesn't need to be anything that's actionable, even if it was recorded. It could be now might be it time to think about our strategy. And to an acute political aide or observer, that may be enough of a signal or something like that to take action on the side without an explicit instruction or tip.
You're saying humans can communicate without actually saying something? Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, that's what Michael Cohen said in his dealings with Trump. He says sometimes you just know what he's telling you to do by his mannerisms.
That's what I was thinking or to take it to good old Chicago or New York mob talk, when they say to the store owner, gee, that's a pretty girl, daughter you got, it'd be a shame if something happened to her when school lets out, or something like that. That's more extreme, but it's in the ballpark of sending a message without saying anything, like, well, the lovely daughter you got there.
Well, the economic dudes are trying to read him. They think he really likes low interest rates. Obviously, from real estate people, they do, right? And when the bonds were starting to tank the last couple of days, I think some people think that was the last straw, where he thought he had to push this off a little bit. Now, whether that's true or not, God only knows. But what I mean, the thing that's intriguing to me, and I'd love you guys to comment, there was a dude on CNBC talking about Apple. Now, Apple's, you know, they get their nose up the ass of China. There's no doubt about that. The guy was talking about they have, I think he said 14,000 direct employees in China, which is less than I thought they had. But there's 1.5 million people in the quote supply chain, a lot of whom work for Foxconn, which I guess you guys know more about them than me. But what do they do? They do the screens? I don't know what they do. Is that what they do, Greg? The screens or something? But the guy said this is a 15 to 20 year. No, maybe it never should have been. That the stuff should have all gone over there, wherever he goes. But this is a 15 to 20 year developmental thing. You're talking minimum. If you said in 10 years we're not going to do anything in China, it's all going to be somewhere else, here or somewhere else. Because I don't think you could pull it off in a decade. Maybe little bits and pieces here and there, but we're talking about, you have no idea the size of that enterprise and the supply chains and everything. Are you going to move all the Foxconn people here? I mean, it's hard for me to even understand the size of some of this stuff. I mean, we had a guy on the show who did coatings for pots. Don't ever call it Teflon. He said I had to move to China because all the pot makers moved to China. I mean, it's way more complicated, I think, than maybe all of us believe, and maybe that he and his people know about it. And I don't think I even know the complexity of it. I think it's way more complicated than we think it is.
Well, I think you hit the bottom line. And wasn't Foxconn supposed to build a plant, a bunch of big plants in Wisconsin,
yeah,
about 10 years ago? Well, and they had all kinds of announcements, but it really didn't follow through for, I think, the reasons you're talking about.
It's a smaller plant, I think, and they gave them, I don't know if they gave them property, they gave them all tech. But there also was one in, when the thing in Wisconsin happened, or was announced, the same day, there was, you know, some people nobody wanted to listen to on TV saying, hey, they promised like Pennsylvania or Ohio the same deal, and they never did it. These guys, I don't know, maybe there was a reason for them not doing it here, because the rest of the stuff didn't come with. I mean, if you're going to do that kind of production of something, you have to have somebody to sell it to. Maybe the people who, I'm saying I mentioned it 4 days this week, and I shouldn't again, but I did a paper in college on tariffs. One car, one country, and it was so complex to try and figure out who's raising prices, who's eating what, who's eating something else. To do this to 80 countries on the same day, every single country is different. Every single industry is different. This is so complicated. You could have 100 guys like me. When I was younger, I was pretty smart, working on this, and I don't know, we could come to a conclusion. You have no idea, especially now. In those days, the Mercedes that I was talking about came over here whole. It wasn't like it was assembled here, or transmissions this place and something else was that place. I don't know how you can figure out where this all ends up, even if you wanted to. Or am I being too academic?
No, it's a great point, worth repeating. Wayne is doing a lot of memes now, and I don't know if he did this one or not, but somebody did one showing an endless factory and a bunch of Americans with tiny, tiny screwdrivers putting, components into Apple phones as far as the eye can see. And the simplistic version of what you're talking about, Tom, with your paper, is, are we really going to have endless rows of Americans with tiny screwdrivers putting iPhones together.
Well, and it's like, was it Vietnam? Do we really want the T-shirt business back? I don't know.
I know it used to be a big business, here down here at the places like Daytona Beach, especially during Easter spring break. The issue with the I remember there was all this hoopla about when the general agreement on tariffs and trade, GATT, became the World Trade Organization. But that was an umbrella, apparently, for a lot of this sort of worldwide global manufacturing and trade and what have you. And I guess the mindset now is to scrap all that, it wasn't a good idea. NAFTA was the same thing, but Trump in his first administration signed a deal with Canada and Mexico that was very similar to NAFTA. Well, and now he wants to put, he puts tariffs on both Canada and Mexico.
Well, a lot of the stuff that I look, I shouldn't be doing this, guys, because A, I'm boring and confusing you and probably the rest of the world. All you have to do is pick a country and start digging, and you realize how complicated it is with every country. I mean, like, for instance, Vietnam, I think, has a lot of what we're talking about, or some of what we're talking about. I didn't even realize we have these, again, you guys educate me, we have tariffs over a certain quota amount. So it's not just, we have a tariff on sugar in this country. Actually, we have a small tariff on sugar, 4 cents a pound, up into a certain number, then it becomes prohibitive, then it becomes 16 cents a pound. Because we want to protect our sugar guys. Now, whether it's a good idea, bad idea, every country does that. We have, I think, some of the timber stuff in Canada. We'll take a certain amount in, and then after that it goes higher. The dairy going from here to Canada, they have, egregious tariffs on it, we might agree, over a certain amount, because they want at least to have some dairy farmers left in Canada. We've never gone over the amount, so there's never really been a tariff charged. Now, Vietnam, they have huge quotas on fireworks. They like to make their own fireworks. They have dairy. They have something else, a list of like 8 things. But then so do we. We've got aluminum. We've got steel. Now, I think the three of us could probably agree, well, hell, if you think you're going to have a navy, you better have a steel company, or if you ever get in a war with somebody, you can't build anything because you don't have steel. So, I mean, everybody has something that they want to protect. Japan has rice. Now, I'm sure our rice farmers could kick their ass, or people in Vietnam, every which way from Sunday, if you let them put them out of business. But Japan goes, no, wait a minute. We need enough rice farmers here, so if anything ever happened, if you guys pissed us off or we pissed you off, we could at least eat. And I don't think anybody has a real problem with that, do you? To a certain extent. Now, the question is, how much does that get too much to where it becomes egregious? And that really is sort of it's very individual, and it's also a matter of opinion in every country, to me, as I dig into the detail. So tell me where I'm wrong.
I don't think you are. I think you're providing great nuance. And I'll just say quickly that as you described very accurately the range of rules, even for one country, I'll toss it back to the group that people can cherry pick for political or rhetorical purposes which part of what you described to emphasize, to make a point, to justify a policy or a change of policy. And it's only if people give both parts of it, as you just did, that the public has any sense of what's really going on.
You just led me into an interesting question. I don't want to quote the guy, but there was I get assaulted. You two guys are probably in the same boat. I got assaulted one day by this Quora Digest, and now I won't say I'm addicted to it, but I've learned more about statistics in baseball. Just somebody writes some dumb question, and there's a million people that have nothing better to do, and they'll dig for like the best sixth inning ever pitched in baseball, and somebody will come up with the answer, right? Well, somebody was talking about how, and this is, you know, I guess this is going to be a shot at somebody, but he's a farmer from up north somewhere, Dakota or someplace, and he goes to this bar, and the bar has three TVs. All three TVs have Fox on. Oh, so they're amazing Trumpers. And yet he said he was there the other day, and the guy goes, "Wait a minute, I didn't vote for him to have Musk fire my daughter." Another guy says, "I didn't vote for him to have tariffs increase with Canada, because by the way, I saw all my stuff to Canada," or something along those lines. And the guy went through the whole thing, and he said, "But all they do is listen to Fox. They don't understand the other side of what the other side of the issue is." And I was, you could say, by the way, when you, Andrew, you brought this up, an amazing thing. You can look at some of the numbers from Canada, and if you want, you can say we're getting screwed. Look at the timber, look at this. But I also read something yesterday that because of the size difference of the country, the average American buys $1,500 worth of stuff from Canada. The average Canadian spends $9,500 on stuff from the U.S. How exactly are we getting screwed there? Now, I don't know how many people here go to vacation in Calgary. I might went skiing up there once. I guess an incredible amount of people from Canada go down to Disney World. Right?
That's right. And I just, you know, case in point with the whole issue with the Canadian border and the 51st state nonsense, most of the Canadians that have residences who bought homes here in Florida as a you know, winter retreat are now selling their property and moving back to Canada, thinking they'll never be able to come back here again. So that's going to have a dramatic. Now our governor DeSantis down here, he says, "Well, we don't need Canadian tourists." Well, news for him, because of, you know, in his first administration, the Muslim ban. Saudis used to be, and people from the United Arab Emirates used to bring their families to Disney World. They don't anymore because they don't want to put up with the hassle with visas. And now they hear all this stuff about ICE picking up people off the street. The tourism industry in Florida is all but dead right now.
Did you see the thing on Saturday Night Live where the guy, they had the picture of the guy make it look like the ICE van was a taco truck. And he was talking about, and Michael Chase said, in China, it's really difficult. How do you tell a 12-year-old he got laid off? If you go back to the basics, and you guys, we have, and I'll use a simple example. I always lose it. Such a simple tunnel. And one of the guys who comes on 2 days a week, Carl Denninger, he's all for tariffs. Now, I sort of agree with him, but it better be somebody as smart as Carl sort of doing it. If you just have some dummy doing it, it's a problem. And he brings up the fact, and I'll use the example of, say, Mexico. We come in with you can't pour crappy water into the Rio Grande. Okay. So the guy on our side has to spend $30 million to fix his plant so we don't pay. Or he can say, how about if I just move to Mexico and pour it into the Rio Grande on the other side? Now, clearly, the Rio Grande still gets dirty, right? So you would think you shouldn't necessarily be able to do that. And somehow, this has to be kind of, well, I'll use the term, evened up. We don't allow child labor in this country, or at least, you know, we think we don't. By the way, in China, it's okay. Or you can enslave the Uyghurs. We don't really like slave labor here anymore. Most of us never liked it. So, okay, but it's all right if you go over there and do it, and we'll buy the stuff cheaper. And Carl's, I think intellectually, he's absolutely correct that somehow you need a mechanism, be it tariffs or others, to even that up, where you and I, if we buy a pair of blue jeans here in this country, don't have to pay $70 because through child labor and pollution, they can make it for 50. Somehow there ought to be $25 in there somewhere to at least even it up. Now, in theory, I don't disagree. I might even agree. I don't know how you ever pull that off. But how do you even that up in your guys' mind? You guys have been around for a while. How do you even that up?
Because here's one simple way is looking back in history U.S. has used tariffs productively. I think Lincoln did a lot of it, and Hamilton certainly did. But it's usually on products to achieve a specific goal, not on countries.
Okay.
I would also point out that, you know, one of the things that happened, you mentioned the, you know, the U.S.-Mexican border, Rio Grande, is one of the things that came out of NAFTA was the establishment of these maquiladora zones, which are basically free trade areas on the Mexican side, but close to the U.S. border, so you don't have a lot of transportation costs. And that used to be, you know, a big deal. And, you know, the places that produce parts for automobiles all started these maquiladora zones. And I know my first book that was published by Macmillan out of Britain, I had this book for a couple of years, and I never noticed. I looked in the back, like the very back page, and it says printed in Mexico. It was actually printed in the maquiladora zone. Some printer moved from the United States over to Mexico for the cheaper labor. But I mean, we have basically constructed this mechanism over many, many years, and can Trump just tear it down all of a sudden without any repercussions?
Well, I think the answer to that is no, because of the complexity. The question is,
yeah.
After, what do you say we go to break, we go back, let's figure out, I don't, as much as people think I'm all against this guy, I'm not. I actually do think that some of where he's going for makes some sense. I just think it's really hard to do, and it's got to be thought out a little better, but S&P futures down 85, NASDAQ futures down 375. This is after a massive move up yesterday, which we'll go through on break. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing off Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tomorrow. Greg Pappas on the board. Inflation rate eased to 2.4% in March. I'm going to dig out that number when Greg is doing traffic weather sports. We're probably going to go through that more tomorrow with Carl. Probably go through it more line by line because we have other guys today. We'll talk about that number tomorrow because I don't know if this month meant that much anyway, given the fact that, if the tariffs are going to start or not, it's going to make a big difference to that, we would think, going forward. Right now we have S&P futures down 98. NASDAQ futures down 435, so we're giving back, the NASDAQ was up 10% yesterday, almost 11, so it's down 2, so we're not giving back much, but we are giving back a little bit. Dow down 596, and just as a way of review, Dow was up 2,900, so it's only giving back, not even 20%. S&P was up 474, so we're giving back maybe 22% of that so far. NASDAQ was up 1,800, so we're giving back 500. We're giving back maybe 40% of that. No, not 33% of that. So we're giving back a little bit, but not much compared to what yesterday was. Now, Europe is up a bunch here because a lot of what happened here happened after they closed. You got the DAX up 986, 5%. It was up a little more, actually, the first time I looked at it. FTSE up 310, 4%. Nikkei around up 313, 4.6%. So wally over there. Nikkei up 2,800. And these guys were getting hammered. So I think they're probably, maybe not up on a week yet, but that's up 9%. Hang Seng up 417, 2%. Shanghai up 36, 1.1%. Those were actually up yesterday, so they don't have as big of a move today because they were up yesterday. Bonds, this is what I think caused a lot of the issue yesterday with the president changing his mind. 10-year down 8 basis points, 4.31, but the 30-year almost made it to 5% yesterday. And now it's down some today, the TYX. The Bund, up 3 basis points, 2.62. Japan up 7, 1.34 oil, which made it down to like 54. I'm thinking Greg's been trading some of the crack spread, so he knows that better than me. But now it's down a buck and a half today, 60.84. But I think we were below 55 at one point. Brent down 161, 63.87. Natural gas down a dime, 371. Gold got a massive move yesterday. It's up again today, up 64 bucks, 31.43. Probably back to, I don't know if it's old highs, but pretty close. Silver up 40 cents, 30.81. And I have a PTI. We have a lot of people in the gold miners index and so forth. I'm going to say we had our best day ever yesterday in there. We were set up for it, and it ran. And it was good. Everybody gets a good day, and we had a good day yesterday. Foreign exchange, the euro is 111, so the dollar is way down against the euro. It was 108 2 weeks ago. And we just talked about a 3% move in a currency. That's big numbers. British pound, not as much, 129.5, so a little higher, but not as much as the other. And we got Bitcoin that's been all over the block, 81,982, down 325 bucks. A lot of stuff there, Greg. When you do traffic weather sports, let us know where oil got down to. I know you're trading that now.
Yeah, morning, everyone. 37 degrees here in Chicago, high 42 today. Fog, we got possible light mist later. Phoenix, 67 now, high 101. Record temps, blazing sunshine. Also an air quality alert, so careful with the outside activities today. Traffic inbound Kennedy
from Montrose. You still got to breathe, Greg.
Inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 37 minutes. Inbound Eden's Lake Cook, 54 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 42 minutes. The Ryan from 95th in is 27 minutes. And the inbound Stevenson, 294 of the Ryan is 43 minutes. NHL, Hawks at Bruins tonight at 6. NBA, the Heat, they lost to the Bulls. That was 111-119 at the Madhouse. And the Rangers beat the Cubs. That was at Wrigley, 6-2. And the White Sox lost at Guardians, 2-3.
Did you hear a story about the game last night, the Bulls?
I was looking. What happened?
Well, they were ahead. I was watching and must have dozed because it was going. I was watching. They were up pretty good. They were playing real well.
Yeah.
They must have been up as much as like 14. Well, they got to where they were only up 5 with a minute left or two, something. And one of their guys, their big star, is it named Hurd or something, gets an uncontested layup to where he could have cut it to 3. Instead, he pulls up and clanks a 3 with nobody around him. But he could have just gone in and got the layup.
Bench. Straight to the bench.
I mean, unreal. Hey, guys, I have a question for you. This is a draw on your lifetime experience here. A lot of what is happening with the tariffs, world trade, you name it, there's been a somewhat of a general debunking of a lot of what the economists when I went to school were really all for is no tariffs, free trade, how that was going to make everybody better. And you guys have been around a while. And I got to remember the guy in class, the guy, Milton Friedman, saying, if we have Chevy plants down in Mexico, they're probably only going to start out making $3 an hour. But just like everywhere else, as this gets better and better, there's going to be people around them, the demand for labor is going to go up, and they're going to be able to get $5 an hour, $6, $8, and over a period of time, they're going to end up being, we're going to essentially grow ourselves customers to where it's the best thing for everybody because they're going to now spend that money here and all the other stuff we make. And, you know, and he also was an absolute convinced, because he went out and did some work for Allende in Chile of all people, that if you can somehow find a way to get more economic freedom, it would work its way into political freedom. And now, you know, it's 40 years later, 50 years later, where people say he was all screwed up. All these economists were wrong. This hasn't happened. And I guess my question to you is, are we, because, I mean, you certainly can't make the case that having some sort of economic freedom to a certain extent in China has caused any difference in the political game. And maybe even in Mexico, maybe even you still got to pay off gangbangers or something. I don't know why their salaries have not gone up as much. I guess the question, are we, how can I say this without being an idiot, is our Judeo-Christian Magna Carta something-something coming out of Europe, are we that unique that we can't just assume that in other countries eventually labor is going to get their fair share or something? Should we just debunk that thought at all and just say it happened here, that somehow you had people strike? Some people would say it was only economics, there weren't enough people. When Roosevelt raised the working age from 14 to 16, what happened was he actually drew enough people out of the working class that you had to start paying more just as a supply and demand thing. What did your guys read on this? I know there's a million questions in there, but can we no longer count on stuff developing like here or other places? Were we that unique, or was it just a time where we had enough resources and not enough people? Why do you think this, quote, isn't working in these other countries?
Well, I would, you look at, say, Europe, for example.
Europe, I think, is kind of like us. So
pretty much so. But the idea that that the libertarians will tell you that, you know, if you drop all regulations on business, you know, everybody's going to live happily ever after. Well, we basically have libertarians right now making policy. I mean, when you boil it down, Musk is a libertarian. This guy, who's his buddy, Peter Thiel, is an ultra-libertarian. But look what's going on with, you know, agency after agency of the federal government is being done away with, and that's not playing well. So that's why 5.2 million people in the United States protested this past Saturday, saying hands off these agencies, hands off Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, VA benefits, and what have you. So I think this libertarian concept I never did like it. I said, basically, I always said libertarians are really Republicans, you know, who, you know, want to drink and smoke pot and chase women, you know, without any repercussions.
Well, you know, Andrew, what do you think?
Let me amplify a little bit on what Wayne is talking about. I think Milton Friedman and others like him are basing it, their thoughts and their suggested reforms on a different world than we have now. It's a world where the assumption was people are operating logically and more or less within the law. So in that sense, arguments for more freedom, less regulation, are in a context where there are law enforcers, Securities and Exchange Commission, and so forth. And I'll just give a quick example. When I was studying antitrust at the University of Chicago Law School, the professor, Frank Easterbrook, had formerly been head of antitrust in the Reagan administration, and for many years afterwards, I think still, is a Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals judge in Chicago. And he loved to argue that there is way too much antitrust regulation, and he would argue with great glee that if there is only two or three competitors in a market, that's plenty, and you don't need all this regulation. But the one caveat that I'll end on here is he said that assumes that they're not illegally conspiring to fix prices.
Why would you ever assume that?
That was his assumption. And the difference now is we're getting to a world where instead of at least ostensibly, even when he was there was a whole apparatus to investigate whistleblower complaints and collusion and so forth. It's not clear that we're seeing that now with the hollowing out of these agencies that Wayne mentioned. And in fact, the beginnings of prosecution against whistleblowers for their whistleblowing as opposed to the people that they're whistleblowing against.
Well, I actually, when you talk about Musk as a libertarian, I you know what, this is just going to shock you dudes, but I'm pretty much in that camp in terms of, that's why, you know, we were listening earlier, that's why I was discussing with Lou the stuff with college sports. Just let it go and see where it lands. People will figure it out in a lot of ways. And you don't need Congress in there with some kind of antitrust. But I'm saying, but if Musk, there's an old saying in the business school is, competition is the best thing in the world for every industry except mine. Because everybody here is a cutthroat. If Elon Musk was a true libertarian, he would never have accepted a carbon credit check. And yet he accepted $9 billion worth of them. So he's a libertarian for you or me, not for him. There's a big difference. Now, Hal, who does the show on Tuesday, is a pretty serious libertarian. And he and I go round and round all the time about, once you give somebody an advantage, you can't back off. You can't say, you guys probably know, I cut my teeth on railroads. I mean, well, my grandfather was a boilermaker. I worked for Pullman. If you give somebody a right-of-way from here to there, and all of a sudden there's a farmer along the way, and there's no road competition, there's no nothing and that other stuff, and the farmer says, can you bring my grain to Chicago? And the guy goes, yeah, well, how much? And he says, how much you got? Well, okay, you've given somebody something. Now you have to make sure that they don't take advantage of it, because that's not why you gave it to them. So once you get yourself involved, I mean, if you didn't have an electric utility and somehow it made it competitive, if you could, you wouldn't have to worry about it, right? But once you do, like in the trading floor, nothing is more competitive than a trading floor. And I'm going to say nothing was straighter, because nobody wanted the business wrecked. And everybody saw everything. So even Milton Friedman, I remember one day somebody asked him, what about insider trading? And he said, I would have no laws against insider trading. This is right to your point, Sandra. It was a different world. Now, if you traded in the IBM pit, and every time the earnings came out, a guy like Wayne, walks in 5 minutes before the earnings and buys calls, and the earnings are good. The next time he buys puts, the earnings are bad. You're probably going to trade with him the first time. Second time, you might back off. The third time, you might whack him in the nose, right? So there was discipline on the floor. We didn't want people doing that because it screwed up the market and ruined our business for everybody. But now, electronically, who the hell can find Wayne? If the SEC doesn't want to look for him, who else can look for him? I don't know who the hell it is. I mean, yesterday, when this thing came out with the Trump announcement back in the OEX pit, I could have told you today, I'm just picking a name, Goldman Sachs ran in to buy 5,000 calls 2 minutes before the announcement came out. I could have told you who bought them. Now I have no friggin' idea. So you're right. I don't think you know how right you are, Andrew, is what I'm saying. You understand what I'm talking about? I mean, we could tell who bought the stuff. And it was. I mean, I'm not talking about going back on time and sales. I mean, you watched the trade happen. So if three guys ran in, if Goldman, Morgan, and God knows who else, you know who was in the meeting with Trump. It was right there. But now electronically, how does anybody know? And if these guys don't want to look, you're right. What's going to happen? Nothing. It was a little too much there.
Again, going back to the earlier point, there can be signals among people that might be just almost indecipherable, even if you had a tape recording of it. It's a grunt, a yep. In fact, I don't know if you told it earlier on the story, but did you in the week? But the whole thing of the boom, I think it was Monday, and it was all based on Hassett saying yep at the beginning of a question, and trillions of dollars moved on that. Did you get into that?
Yeah, you know what? You know what, Andrew? I had a different, little bit of a different take on that, and I'd love your guys' comment. Way back in the day, and I'll be brief with this because I kind of told it the other day. Way back in the day, you only had the news tape. You had the Reuters and the Dow Jones, right, coming across on the funky green machine. And there were people in the crowds. You were able to, like, say you were trading AT&T. You could make sure that even if the tape was delayed, you could set the tape so the AT&T stuff came through to you, to your crowd, or your house, or your whatever, where the hell you were, your office. You could essentially filter that out. And there were all kinds of people that tried to essentially mechanically read the tape. So if you were somebody who believed that, say, stock splits were terrific, any sort of news that came out with Andrew Corp approved an expansion of shares, that was usually a tell for somebody who was going to announce a stock split. So you would have a machine that essentially read that, and maybe as people got sophisticated enough, first maybe an alarm went off, but secondly the thing actually would start trading ahead of you. I honestly think, and you know, you guys tell me if I'm really goofy here, I think that when the 90-day, just the text of a 90-day delay in the tariff came across as part of a news item, I think people's machines started buying. It had nothing to do with what the guy said. As soon as that came across, people have stuff set. Hey, we think this guy Trump is going to delay this. We want to be the first to recognize it. And I think now you can set your machines to where if that comes up, you start buying. I'm wondering if that isn't what happened, to be honest with you. But again, you might be right too. What do you think of what I just came up with?
Well, you also had Trump sending out a tweet or whatever the other day saying this is a great time to buy.
Actually, it was yesterday morning.
Yeah. So, you know, you put all this together and, you know, did he short the market to make money for himself and his close buddies? I mean, you know, we know that the regulatory agencies are history now.
Yeah,
so
pretty much.
They don't expect anything from any of them, and that includes also the Justice Department.
Well, now, okay, we've had the tariff that ground everybody down for a couple of weeks, and people, there had to be massive pressure on him to change policy. Had to be. I mean, you were talking 2 weeks ago about the Republican representatives getting phone calls. So now he comes back. Now we had this huge run up yesterday that got us back. I'm going to say how much of it. Let me get the graph up here to Q's. Didn't get us back everywhere, I don't think. Now today we're down some. And by the way, with stocks and jacks, we know one thing. We know for sure, guys, we can't trade yesterday market. Now what the hell do we do today? Is the question. Do we think we want a 1 year thing here? Okay. We were at 475. All right, but last week, say we were almost 490 a couple weeks ago. We get down to like 420-ish, then went back to 465, now we're at 453. Now we're in the middle. We're 89 days away from having to do something. Where the hell are we now? No man's land or what?
Well, in the spirit of the Jacks part of the Stacks and Jacks show, I'll just quote Yogi Berra, who said words to the effect, it's very hard to predict the future.
Well, okay, but I have three questions, and I'll just go through it real quick because we've got a few minutes. For what I do, for most people, when I say most people, you guys both know I never give advice on the air because I don't know who I'm talking to, okay? You can only give advice to a client when you know the client. Everything in my world is individual. A lot of other firms do a lot better by just cramming somebody in the same hole, but I don't do that. I have a lot of people that are retired, and over the last several years, like especially new money that came in, or maybe the last year or so, with the market being kind of up and down all over, we have a lot of people that say are 30%, 40%, 50% in T-bills because they were paying 5%, better than a sharp stick in the eye, right, if you weren't. Now, if the person really wanted to be in the market, you know, we put them in the market. But and then we have some people that are in the market that are protected, Then we have people that are younger that just want to be in, and they're just in, and they, you know, they give us money every once in a while. So it all depends on the person. Now the question is, for me, and you guys are, you know, of age, when do I say maybe we should think about drawing some of this out of the T-bills and investing it? When do I say, well, you know, we've got these puts that are very expensive, and we were at 450 yesterday, or 440 in the Qs. At 440, I'm not so sure for you that we have to protect all the way down. Maybe we just protect another 15% down or something, which is fine unless it goes 40, right? These are the kinds of questions that I'm constantly asking myself, and I'm looking at my range of people and trying to pick out what's right for each person. What do you guys say? I don't think I'm there yet on pulling the money out of the T-bills. Do you? If somebody is not working anymore or whatever, I don't know that half in a good paying cash spot right now isn't the right spot for them. Again, it's all individual, but what do you guys think? Should I be all in here or all cash? Or what would you do if you were me?
I think you're right, Tom, with your instinct and your advice, particularly for this older person, because even despite the big run-up yesterday, the recent week exposed underlying problems. I mean, we've still got problems with Canada. Now, we may, as Americans, we may think, well, they can get over it and so forth, but just to use them as an example, there's a lingering problem that could come back in 90 days, and who knows?
If you had to predict what happens in 90 days, or first of all, do we wait 90 days, or does stuff start happening tomorrow?
Well, Yogi Berra said it right, I think. Like, and he said predictions are risky, especially when they're about the future.
That's a better quote. It was supposed to be humorous. Yeah. Wayne, thanks for making it amusing instead of my misquote.
Well, let's zero in on the one that is, it doesn't appear to be going away. We got one last question, guys, and we got to go. What do you think happens in the next 3 weeks with China?
I think it'll be some sort of a deal.
Me too.
Regarding what? What can they give us?
The last thing Trump wants is all these dollar store, Dollar Tree people going in there and finding out the thing they bought for $1, $1.25 is now $5. Because we know that's his base. That's where his base shops. They're rural. They don't have big stores around. That these are places they go to.
Right. So you think there's a deal? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? We'll next week, if you're wrong, I'll say, hey, you said you thought there was a deal. There's no deal. Anyway, great to hear from you, buddy. I hope to hear from you again soon. I wouldn't care if you came on every week. I love it. SP Futures down 104. Right. NASDAQ Futures down 468. Greg, nice job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.